and Studio, or tweet me at Stage the Letter N Studio. Let's go out with more of Pink Floyd's Eclipse from The Dark Side of the Moon. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
Scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of An Evening with Dan Levinson at Kennedy Violins on Saturday, August 26th at Kennedy Violins in Vancouver. His stage show, An Evening with Dan Levinson, is an intimate evening of musical conversation that combines old-time fiddle, Appalachian banjo, stories and song in a storytelling format to tell the story of life in rural Appalachia and life on the road. Again, that's An Evening with Dan Levinson at Kennedy Violins on Saturday, August 26th at 4 p.m. at Kennedy Violins, 508 Southeast 117th Avenue in Vancouver. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi there. My name is Eric Bartels, and you're listening to KBOO-FM 90.7 Community Radio. If you happen to have been driving along Northeast Broadway recently, you might have noticed something new on the storefront of Pets on Broadway, a shop at the corner of Northeast 28th Avenue. The large windows are adorned with a circus of big, brightly colored figures. Fish, kittens, a serpent wrapped around an animated tree trunk. It's an eye-catching display, fun, goofy, and clearly the work of a talented artist. That artist, an appropriately colorful figure himself, is with us today. Scott Campbell, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
Who paints signs these days, Scott? Who are the people behind hand-painted, hand-lettered signs that we see on storefronts and billboards and buildings?
I guess people that stuck with the craft, because around the 90s when the whole computer stuff came in, graphic vinyl lettering and stuff, at so many painters closed their shop, and people that just stuck with it, you know, that really liked the art, the craft, the hand stuff, you know, the hand done stuff.
There's a long history to sign painting. It goes back 150 years. It was the origin of competition between products, brands. Is it dying?
It did start to die out, but it is making a resurgence because people are starting to discover that like vinyl has its place, definitely, like store hours and stuff like that, and menus and whatever, you know, like a menu board with a lot of text. But when people want something with more flair, you can't always get it with graphics, and a lot of the people behind the graphics aren't necessarily artists or craftspeople. They just, you know, some of them are. I mean, some are really good, but so over the last two decades, people are starting to discover that, you know, I don't want to say that vinyl graphics are soulless, but in some aspects they are, like especially with what I do, window splashes.
Does that mean that there are more people out there now who actually see sign painting as a way to make a living?
Yeah, and I know in Great Britain especially, it really has had a resurgence, and there's classes and people really getting into it and pushing it. But and in America, I mean, I know I've had an effect on people with my YouTube channel, because I teach all over the world window painting. And so a lot of people will come there. They might be face painters or people that, you know, are just, they want to make a living off their art. And they come to my channel and they discover, hey, I can make some extra money painting windows. So I know on my own, I've helped some people get started in the career of painting window splashes.
Is it easy to sell yourself? Is it do the economics work out for the business owner who might be reluctant to say, well, gee, isn't that going to cost me more to hire an actual human with artistic talent to do something on my windows?
No, it's actually about a fourth of the cost, because in many cases, like with me, you know, like what I painted yesterday was pretty wild. It was just, you know, monster discounts with all these made up monsters out of my head. Just to design that, it would probably cost them more to have a graphic designer sit down and design it on a computer, let alone get it set up for graphics, apply it to the glass. So it's actually more economical. And but then there's such a wide range. And the thing that's given window splash artists a bad name to some businesses is that their stuff is amateurish and they're just starting. A lot of people start at the holidays and stuff. And so that's where I come in. I want to teach them how to, you know, up their game and stuff.
You say you're one of the ones that stuck with it, that you've been painting, you've been a sign painter for a long time. Have you watched that resurgence in interest on both the part of the business owner and the artist in sign painting?
Yeah, it's only been the last maybe 3 or 4 years, though, really, that it's starting to really develop more. And I think part of it is just there's so much stuff online, like Instagram and YouTube, and people, you know, the interchange of ideas has helped, you know, bring back the resurgence of painting, you know, signs. But sign painting is a lot different than what I do. It's really a different thing. Mine is more, I could probably be considered more a character designer or a muralist rather than a sign painter, because I'm definitely not a sign painter. Even though I paint signs, I don't have a lot of the skills that sign painters have, and I don't have the certain abilities and, you know, to do signs. I can do signs, but it's like splashes are different.
Maybe you should talk a little bit more about that, because maybe I've been careless about the vocabulary I'm using. When I say sign painter, I tend not to make a distinction between, say, the work you did at Pets on Broadway, on Northeast Broadway, and maybe a billboard, or maybe you could explain a little bit the difference between a sign painter and a splash painter.
Yeah, well, with me, I have a really limited probably because I don't want to, really. I'm not really into fonts, and I don't copy things. And like if a business says I want, you know, this particular font, I probably, you know, would try to match it. Like if I was doing Happy Valentine's Day, I would definitely do a feminine script or something. I wouldn't do some like monster lettering. Whereas on Halloween, vice versa, I wouldn't want to do, you know. So I have some fonts that I've developed, my own fonts, that I use, maybe a dozen and variation of those dozen. But the fonts and the lettering and the sign work is not paramount. It's kind of equal to, like, basically what I do when I do a splash is it's usually at least one third art and maybe two thirds lettering. But sometimes it can be just like in the case of Pets on Broadway, it can be a complete, like a mural and not have any lettering. And the reason they do that is just to attract attention. But sign painters have so many skills of like different types of paint, different brushes. Like some of the brushes they use, I can't even use. I don't even know how to use them, and vice versa. Like I use a 2-inch foam to do lettering, and people are like, how do you do that? Or a 4-inch foam, or I use a 4-inch roller or a 7-inch roller to do huge lettering fast. And my whole thing is about speed, you know, how it's about doing it fast. But now as I'm getting older, because I've painted well over 70,000 windows, so then after a while, you know, the speed gets matched by accuracy and technical skill because you've done it so much. So, sign painters are different. They use, you know, sometimes they'll make patterns and they pounce them on the walls or the windows or whatever, and then they follow it. And a lot of times they use what's called a mall stick, and they hold their hand on it. Like I don't do that. I don't have to use a stick because my hand is just, it's really accurate. And I can do really small lettering. But it took me decades to develop the ability to do just 1-inch lettering, which isn't super small, but pretty tiny, a 1-inch font.
So when you use the term sign painter, maybe you could give us an example of what, where that would be represented. What represents sign painting as opposed to the sort of colorful kind of cartoonish window?
Well, they cross over. Flashes. They cross over each other for sure. Like somebody like Cup and Saucer on Hawthorne Street, you know, they have a sign that's painted and it's just beautiful. It's all hand lettered. It's been there for, you know, since the 90s or maybe 80s even. And it's, you know, it's painted on the inside. It's done with one-shot lettering enamel. It's a lot slower, you know, whereas when I show up, I just like attack the window. It's so fast and it's like, and I, you know, I've really kind of developed my own thing that's separate from even other window painters.
So the distinction is that in the case of, say, a restaurant where what goes on the window is meant to stay there for the long term,
right,
as opposed to something that you do for a store owner that might be gone in
Could be gone in a week. It could be gone in a year. I had one that was up for 26 years downtown Portland that looked the same as the day I did it, and it was because it didn't get any sun or rain. But so they can last. You can also clear them too. But basically, I use house paint, interior house paint, and eggshell finish. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But yeah, it's an exciting art form for me. And it's just, and as I'm getting older now, I'm developing clients that really just let me do what I want. Like Lippman Party Supply, Pets on Broadway, and then this new one I got, it's a liquidation center, and they're just like, you know, they're set back from the road. And I talk to them a lot and I work things out because my main objective is to get people to look. I want them to turn their head and look. You got 2 seconds. So yeah, you can have some nice uniform sign with everything matches with the building and nobody's gonna look. My whole thing is get people to look. First of all, just get them to look. Once they look, then you can list out things like, oh, we have, you know, this, we have food, candy, we have, you know, tools or whatever at this liquidation place. But so I've developed a lot of ways to that benefits the business, you know, with my art.
You mentioned the couple of seconds that you have to get someone's attention. Fine artists will talk about how little time people actually spend, even in galleries, in museums. In truth, people spend very little time looking at works of art. They tend to sort of, they don't often study them.
Right, right.
In a way that would sort of reveal more about what they're looking at. What is the thing about signs, the stuff you do, whether it's the stuff you do or more permanent sign paintings, that what don't people realize? What is it they sort of miss when they're just seeing this stuff in passing? What is it they don't know about the artist's work?
You're talking about me in particular,
well, or
just in
or
general?
In general, I mean, what are the skills that go into either one of those sort of genres that we're talking about that people sort of don't understand?
Well, like with what I do, or when other window splash artists, a lot of people, I think, they don't know that it's painted in the first place these days, like because there's so few people that do it. So it's like I've had at least a couple dozen times where someone will approach me and say, oh, I've seen this stuff everywhere. I thought they were decals, because they don't know that someone actually painted it. Or so many times people are like, oh my gosh, you actually painted that. Sometimes I'm painting and people will come up and say, did you paint that? That's that's funny too. And I know they know I painted it, but it's just a way for them to start the conversation, but it just sounds funny. But yeah, people don't realize how, you know, how it's done either, really. There's just like, you know, it's such a combination of things. And on my YouTube channel, I have over 800 videos and I talk about everything. I talk about composition, design, color, how to make the colors, paint. And I always I have a lot of footage on me interacting with the customer. You know, I walk in with my GoPro on the head and I just go. And once in a while people say, you know, I don't want to be taped. But generally I'm so used to it, I just do it. And I get a lot of really good candid footage of me talking to the, okay, so this is what you want. Yeah, we want to take these scissors. Can you draw a hand with these scissors cutting a tomato plant? And can you do this? And I go, that's fine, but we should do this too. And you know, we mull it over and we do everything all right there in the design. And then a lot of times they just go, do whatever you want.
Right.
And when they say that, they get incredible work. They get dragons or flying saucers or bugs, you know, bugged by high prices and plants and, you know, or aliens, you know, they'll shop. They come from all of the universe to shop here, you know, with an alien with three heads, and it's just off the wall.
I think it's easy enough for artists to talk about the value of, hey, this was handcrafted. Here's something that's, you know, driven by sort of a human skill set that includes, you know, whatever the artist's emotions and sort of past history happens to encompass. Do you hear from people their sense that they're seeing something different? Do people say to you, gosh, I like that. I like that that was handmade as opposed to something that was computer generated and stamped out of vinyl?
Well, not in so many words, but yeah, they definitely say, wow, your artwork, I love it. I've heard that millions of times. You're so incredible. Your artwork is amazing. You know, I remember when I was a kid, you know, older people tell me, you know, like I remember seeing this, you know, you see it everywhere for the holidays and, you know, and just, yeah, I get so much acknowledgement from people.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but do you think people understand that they're seeing something that's somehow more authentic? Do you think we
some do, but a lot of people, probably 80% of the people are busy, you know, they're busy, they're doing stuff, they're not interested. It's like, you know, but yeah, you get like 10-15% of people like that look, and then, you know, a little bit smaller percentage, maybe 1 in 10 will actually say something, or but still that's a lot when there's all these people going by.
Yeah, I just wonder if we have some sort of natural ability to sense that something was created by hand as opposed to machine-made. Maybe that's just a flight of fancy.
Yeah, it just depends on the person, really.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit about where the sign painter, the splash artist, is that a term? Where that artist stands along the spectrum. Do you feel any need to, when you tell people I'm a sign painter, or you know, you describe what you do, do you feel any need to justify yourself as an artist?
Not to justify it, but to explain it, because what I call myself is a window painter. And so people, oh, you paint trims, you paint windows. And then I go on to tell them, no, I paint cartoons and I paint big characters. Oh, you do Burgerville, you know, or I've seen your stuff. You do dragons and you do Lippmans and, you know, people, you know, once they see my work, then they see this Hanna-Barbera-esque sort of, you know, crazy Warner Brothers art. And they, you know, but still it's my style that I've incorporated based on my people before me. Once they see it, they go, oh yeah, I see your stuff everywhere. I always recognize it.
You have a fine art background. You're a trained artist, yes?
I'm not trained. Not, you know, I'm not commercially trained, but I've studied on my own.
Okay. When did it start early as a child?
My older brothers, Michael and Don, they were both, they still are, they're artists. And so I always looked up to them and I always wanted to, you know, be a fine artist, be in a gallery, you know, and stuff like that. And I've been in several galleries over the years when I was younger, in my 20s, and then, you know, nothing really came of it, or, you know, I didn't really persevere. But I've always painted windows, you know, since I was 21. So it's been 41 years. But yeah, I wanted that too. And then I got into the whole lowbrow art movement, Juxtapose magazine, and the whole SoCal weirdo tiki surfer hot rod art stuff. And I did that for about, I don't know, maybe 8 years. And I was really desperately trying to get a name. And I was just kind of on the cusp of the whole lowbrow art movement. And I never really made it in and fit in because I was concentrating more on the negative side of it rather than the positivity that was coming from it. But yeah, I've been in like a lot of different shows with some pretty pretty well-known lowbrow artists like R. Crumb. I was in a show with him, and also Robert Williams, he's basically the grandfather of lowbrow art, you know, and several others too, Anthony Oz Gang and Lisa Petrucci. There's just all kinds of, I mean, most people listening won't know who they are, but if they're into lowbrow art, they will. But so I did that for a while, and I remember at one point I was in 12 shows simultaneously, lowbrow themed art shows all over the United States. Like, what they do is they have a call for artists. Like, they'll say, we have a show called Bedtime Stories. Do you want to be in the show? And whatever that meant. So I did a clown, and it was actually three-dimensional. It was a casting. It was because I sculpt too, and it was all painted. It was this evil clown, and it had a little poem underneath it. I forget how it goes, but it was basically, you know, comes in the night, and if you do something, he might get you, whatever. But it was called Bedtime Stories. So, and you know, because it's a lowbrow theme, it's going to have a weird twist to it. So I had, you know, another show, a pirate theme, and another show might have been like tikis but I got tired of it, you know. And at the time too, I was doing the whole Extremo the Clown thing, and that was such a rush, you know, to be at a gallery opening paled in comparison to being coming over the Fremont Bridge and it's raining and I got my clown makeup drifting with my puppets in my van and I'm looking down on Portland like I feel like I'm a god. I'm just like, I own this town and I love people, but I love myself too. And I
we didn't mention at the start of the show the Extremo the Clown phase, sort of a traveling ambassador for your work. I've seen the video where you're sort of in costume or in character as Extremo and doing a storefront at the same time, kind of a mix of documentary film and sort of instructional and entertainment at the same time. Did that sort of get your name and your face out there? Was it helpful in terms of establishing yourself as an artist?
I don't know. It helped with the whole lowbrow thing because, you know, it's like I had this art car and it was really different. And some people are really into that, the fact I was a clown and I did this art. Because when I did the fine art, I was Extremo the Clown. If I had a show, I was a clown. Like, I did a show in Chicago called Tura, 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 which is Tura Satana from, what is it, Kill Pussycat Faster, Faster or something?
Russ Meyer.
Yeah. Anyway, she was there, too. I got to meet her before she passed away. But anyway, I was invited to be in the show. So I flew to Chicago, and I had I got to meet her, and they had, like, maybe 35 artists, lowbrow artists. And the guy that ran the show, his name's Mitch McConnell. He's an incredible illustrator. He's worked for everybody, but he's a fine artist too. But anyway, I did a piece. Everybody was doing the whole Faster Pussycat Kill theme. So
Sexploitation,
yeah.
Low budget sexploitation films from the late 60s and early 70s.
Yeah, so what I decided to do, she had another film called Astro Zombies, which is really just super bad, super, you know, B movie. Anyway, I did I actually built a box because I'm really good at chroma depth, which I do chroma depth murals. I'll try to explain it really quickly. It's basically splits up the spectrum, you know. But anyway, Astro Zombies, it was, you know, and it had a picture of her and she's fighting this, you know, they were skull creatures and they, you know, from outer space with knives, machetes, attacking people, whatever. But I did a chroma depth thing, which is, it splits up the spectrum this way. It's just Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, blue, indigo, violet. So when you paint in black light and you paint in layers. You start with the blue, you come forward to the green. And anyway, so I did a box with an actual black light in it with this, and I had glasses. And I ended up giving it to Mitch O'Connell. I didn't sell it, and I didn't want to ship it back because I didn't want it to break. So I ended up giving it to him. But so that's, you know, that's an example of one of the lowbrow art shows. But I just got tired of it. And about 3 years ago, I actually just stopped all the Extremo stuff. And I started teaching on YouTube. And now I'm not really a performer. I'm more of an instructor. I love teaching. And I still entertain a little. I dance and sing once in a while in my videos. But for the most part, I love painting. I love learning and teaching people. And people, they tell me stuff like, oh, I got Home Depot. I did 8 of their stores and, you know, and stuff like that. And it's really exciting.
You have a little bit of an affinity for that sort of Halloween theme stuff. It seems like you do a lot of that. But at the same time, anyone who sees the windows over at Pets on Broadway will see these sort of delightful, kid-friendly characters. You move between those two places easily, obviously.
Yeah, a lot of my art is more, you know, it's dark, and my fine art is more dark, but it's also can be cute and dark. So yeah, I move between ultra cute to ultra really disturbing, you know, and but not so much the super disturbing, but you know, more dark stuff like zombies and stuff like that. Nothing really, really bad or perverse. But on windows, I have a range too where I do have ultra cute, like if I'm doing a baby clothing resale store, yeah, I'll do super uber cute, like little hearts and unicorns and rainbows and everything. But if I'm doing, say, you know, a tattoo shop, I'll do a more graphic art style or kind of like creep show where it's still corny. It looks a lot like, you know, Scooby-Doo, but it's a little more darker. And I actually did something once where the store got upset after a while because people were complaining. It was for a place, a pawn shop on 82nd Street, and it was cartoony, but it was really wild and bloody. It was a cowboy zombie, and he had his intestines and out, and he made a lasso with his intestines around the head of a dead zombie cow, you know. And I mean, it was just...
Was this around Halloween or...
Yeah, but still, it was just like, it was really just, it was too much for people.
Pushing the edge. Let's go back a little bit to that notion of the sign painter and where he or she stands in the sort of art spectrum. Do you think that there's mutual respect out there between the sort of fine artist in the studio and the person who's out on the sidewalk?
Oh, yeah. I think we appreciate that it's a different medium, you know, and... You know, is that what you're talking about? Like the difference between a fine artist and a commercial artist, and do they respect each other? Or?
When we talked about whether the sign painter has to sort of justify the work that's being done.
I don't think so, not nowadays. Like they're kind of like a lower form of artist or something. Yeah. Yeah, not really. Because like Leonardo da Vinci couldn't do what I just drew that fast and without even thinking. Leonardo da Vinci couldn't do this, couldn't go like that and go like that and go like that because he hasn't done it before. So he doesn't have the mental ability to just, you know, to knock out something like that. He can't do it because he hasn't done it. So, you know, he can't do that. Yeah, maybe I can't do what he does, but that's really, I think as artists, you have to realize that. I'm not a figure skater. I'm not good at gardening. You know, I'm a splash artist. I paint cartoons on windows, you know.
What else do you have around town currently? If somebody might want to, hey, this guy, I'm going to go look at his stuff. Where else might we see your work?
Well, the one I just did is on McLaughlin, and it's kind of, it's not quite to Oregon City, but it's heading towards that direction. And it's kind of offset from the road. It's by a Round Table Pizza, but it just says Liquidation Center, but now it's got monsters all over it. And then always they can see my stuff at Lippman Party Supply. Like I'm getting ready to go there and do Halloween.
What about the your YouTube? How do I get there?
The best thing, the easiest way is just to do a search on YouTube. It's Scott with one T and Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L, like soup. And if you just type in Scott Campbell Window Painter, you'll find my site. And I have, I think 840 videos. I'm going to start a Patreon account too pretty soon. And so I'm going to still be doing at least one to maybe two videos on YouTube, but I'm going to have like exclusive video and other stuff on Patreon. Because on YouTube, you know, it's like I've been doing it for 3 years and I really love it. I've got over 3,000 subscribers, so it's starting to grow. But as far as making money, it's not, unless you're in the millions, you're not going to be making a living off YouTube. So Patreon will help with that, hopefully.
Okay. A renaissance in what might have been a dying art and a place for people to go and maybe learn a little bit about how to do it. Our guest today has been Scott Campbell. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO FM 90.7 Community Radio. My name is Eric Bartel. Scott, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, it was great.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag FuzzyBoo and you'll be entered to win a chance to have FuzzyBoo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kboo.fm/fuzzyboo.
Hello, KBOO listeners. The time is almost 12 noon. Coming up next is Buscando America. And then after that, we have more Spanish programming. And it will be Fa Radio from 1:30 until 2:30, and then Radio Tonale from 2:30 to 4. 4 p.m., we will have Democracy Now!, followed by 5 o'clock, our own KBOO-produced news. So stick around. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of An Evening with Dan Levinson at Kennedy Violins on Saturday, August 26th at Kennedy Violins in Vancouver. His stage show, An Evening with Dan Levinson, is an intimate evening of musical conversation that combines old-time fiddle, Appalachian banjo, stories and song in a storytelling format to tell the story of life in rural Appalachia and life on the road. Again, that's An Evening with Dan Levinson at Kennedy Violins on Saturday, August 26th at 4 p.m. at Kennedy Violins, 508 508-